See, I really didn't understand what forgiveness was. I thought forgiveness was kind of like you pretend something didn't happen or it didn't hurt, or that you can only be forgiven if you have some conditions attached to it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that the freedom in experiencing a forgiven life, and as well as forgiving someone who didn't deserve it, because essentially that's what God did for us. We didn't deserve it.
Hey everyone, Chandler Patterson here. Welcome to the Jesus on Display podcast. Before we begin our content, I wanted to say thanks for supporting us here at Fellowship Greenville with your gifts and generosity. Because of your giving, we get to share resources like this podcast with you to help reach you wherever you are in your life with Jesus. If you'd like to support the ministry of Fellowship Greenville, you can head to fellowshipgreenville.org/give to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and we hope you enjoy this episode. So what does it mean to forgive? I mean, this is a question that we ask ourselves regularly. What does forgiveness really do for our lives? As we make connections with others, how do we move on from past trauma with our personal experiences so that it doesn't spill over into close relationships? Within this episode, you'll get to hear from longtime members of Fellowship Greenville, Jose and Michelle Alvarez. They discuss how God has shaped their individual lives and their marriage through lessons on forgiveness. There have been plenty of people who have heard Michelle and Jose's story. They've benefited from hearing that and what God has done in their lives, both as individuals and as a married couple. We're always looking for ways to share stories of grace while also sharing the importance of storytelling and how that connects us and makes us feel more like a family. And this episode tells a great story. So enjoy this episode centered on finding freedom in forgiveness with Jose and Michelle Alvarez.
So I never realized coming into this relationship that we both brought suitcases, figurative suitcases that were filled with our history, our experiences, our family of origin, our DNA. And that as we would come to know one another, we would gradually unpack those suitcases.
Yeah, I mean, we used suitcases to throw clothes in. We didn't realize that a lot of the things that have happened to us or things that we just experienced in life would have an effect on how we did life. And so this is our story, but there's probably a lot of people listening and watching that have similar stories. So let's unpack it.
Okay, one piece at a time.
Yeah, here we go.
So Jose and I met the summer of 1980, which was a lifetime ago. But at that time, I always attended church. I mean, I was at church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night for visitation, Friday night for college and career. And if there was something going on Saturday, say there was a choir practice, I was there as well. And the reason we were always at church was because we knew it made the pastor happy.
Yeah.
And my dad was the pastor.
Yeah.
And we wanted daddy to be happy.
Wanted him to be happy. And I was a new believer when I met Michelle. Even though I went to church as a kid, my journey of faith in Jesus began as a college student. And it was really at the end of my college career that I began this journey of faith, and I wanted to go to church to be in a community of other believers and to learn. I mean, I was a babe. I wanted to be taught, and so this story started when, on a road trip and in the minor leagues, I happened to go to the church where her dad is pastoring, and I had no idea that she was the pastor's daughter.
Yeah, at this little church, when someone that wasn't a part of our church appeared, everyone took notice. Everyone was aware that the stranger was present. And so it was interesting that as he walked in and everyone, you know, heads turned and all that, it was a surprise. And I had no idea who he was or why he was there.
Yeah, and I was surprised when your dad invited me to lunch, which minor league ball players don't turn down free lunches. And to find out that you were coming to that same house. And so as we began dating, it was a six-month whirlwind of dating. I was in the minor leagues. We didn't know what our future looked like. But then we started realizing what was in some of those suitcases that we had experienced in life so far, and some of it wasn't pretty.
Yeah. So as I tell some of our friends, I think my parents fell in love with Jose before I did. But we did get engaged 6 months after we met and began planning a wedding. And it was at that point that the suitcases kind of came open.
Yeah, I didn't know a lot about her past other than where she was born in Chattanooga. She knew a little bit about where I came from. You knew that my parents had been divorced. I was one of four kids all born illegitimately to the same man and woman. And they eventually got married, and then they got divorced after my dad spent 6 of 9 years in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. And so I had shared a little bit of that with Michelle. I didn't go into depth about a lot of the painful experiences that we had growing up, but it really it began to start to be revealed as we started preparing for marriage.
Yeah. Weddings are very revealing. I've discovered that in the work that I do, that you find a lot about family dynamics when you start dealing with planning a wedding. And that's what happened. As I was getting ready to send out invitations, and I said to Jose, what's your father's address?
Yeah, I thought she was talking about my stepdad, and I said, well, you know, just send it to my mom. And she said, no, I want your dad's address. And I said, for what? And she's like, because I'm going to invite him to the wedding. And I was, what wedding are you talking about? Not our wedding. And she kept going down this road about, yeah, I'm going to invite him. And I was like, no, you're not. And she says, yes, I am. And so I tell people, we had our first family growth session. Some people would say an argument, but we weren't even married yet, and we were in the middle of a conflicting issue.
Yes. And I had no idea that the history behind all of this was a very painful one. And I did not realize how impactful this decision could be. And so we began talking about it, and he was very resistant initially. But I felt like we needed to include all of the family, that we needed to make this a family situation. And I didn't understand why we just couldn't invite him. Why couldn't he just be present, if nothing else?
Yeah, for me, it was she had no idea the pain that we had experienced growing up. You know, my dad was arrested when I was 5. He was sent off to the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, sentenced to 9 years. He ended up serving 6. I remember, you know, a lot of the painful experiences when he got out of jail, you know, thinking that we'd be a family together. And very shortly after, about a month actually, before my parents were on the road to divorce, I had to jump off our back porch on his back and just beat on his back because he was physically hurting my mom. And so, you know, when she says, hey, I want to invite your dad to the wedding, it's like all of a sudden I just a rush of emotions and almost anger. And, you know, I think I had a lot of reason to be. You know, he came to my little league games, but never came to a high school game, a college game, a minor league game, and at this time I was not in the big league, so I couldn't say that yet, but it was just painful. And for many of you, maybe you're thinking, well, say that I understand what you're saying, Jose, because I've had those same feelings with my dad or someone else that has hurt you. And so she asked the big question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started being concerned because I felt like if there's this kind of animosity going on because of another relationship, could that creep into our relationship? And so I asked Jose the big question. I said, haven't you ever forgiven your dad?
Yeah. That stung. Yeah, I had to think about that. Not because I didn't know the answer, but I didn't know how to express it. And so I came up with what I thought was the best way to justify me not forgiving him. And I said, forgiving him, he doesn't deserve to be forgiven. And that's when Michelle looked at me and with those beautiful green eyes that I adored, said, do you deserve to be forgiven? And it was like a sword, you know, just kind of like just nailed me in the chest. I hate when she's right, but she was. And I had a very unforgiving heart, and I wanted him to pay for the hurt that he had done to our family.
Yeah. And I did not understand the depth of what he had experienced. But this was the beginning of me learning to understand what had happened in the past with him and his family. And so I also felt like that if he couldn't forgive his dad, what might I do in the future that would be unforgivable? And so that was a red flag for me. It was a concern. And I knew that he was new in his faith, and I knew that there was growth that was necessary. And I think this was a pivotal point in our relationship.
Yeah, and, I'd say that I didn't really understand. I knew that I wanted to be forgiven for my sins. I mean, I didn't want to go to hell. I wanted to go to heaven. So, yeah, I'm going to accept the forgiveness that, God offers to us. And by allowing his son to die in my place, and, yeah, I received forgiveness for my sin, shame, and guilt because of what Jesus did on the cross. But that little verse that says, if you won't forgive others, neither will your heavenly Father forgive you, it became emboldened. And it's like, okay, I know I should forgive, but man, this is difficult. And if you've been hurt, you've been wounded, you're probably thinking the same thing. Yeah, it is difficult, and I don't want to do it. And then people help me understand that not forgiving someone else is like you drinking poison thinking they're going to get sick. It doesn't happen like that. So the Spirit of God began working. It wasn't like, you know, I heard voices and Michelle wasn't nagging me about it. But I really sense the Spirit of God wanting to set me free from this unforgiving heart, but I really didn't know how to do it. And I just, I remember calling up my dad and telling him that I was going to get married and met an incredible woman. And I, you know, wanted to invite him to the wedding, but I knew that this was going to cause some unbelievable pain in my family because my mom sacrificed so much for us, and for me to invite him to the wedding was going to cause chaos. I mean, I was, you're talking about major issues, and I did. I got it from my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, my sisters, my brother. How could you do this to mom? Of all that she's done for you, how could you do this and invite him to the wedding? And so as I'm going into this phone call with my dad to let him know that I'm getting married, I had to start off with, before I tell you about the wedding, I want you to know that a couple of years ago that I trusted Jesus. I believe that he is the Son of God. He died on the cross. He was buried. He arose, and I believe that he's forgiven me of all my sins, and he also is leading me to have a forgiving heart. But I need to ask you to forgive me for having a hatred toward you. And that was difficult because the pride, I didn't feel like I had done anything wrong. I was just a kid. You know, what did I do wrong to not deserve his love and affection and care? And, you know, why didn't he want to come see me play in college and in the minor leagues? You know, wasn't he proud of me? And so he kind of gave a flippant answer, like, yeah, that's fine. Nothing, no really death. But what took place was I began starting to experiencing this transformative thing in my own life because of expressing forgiveness. And I think it's James Dobson that said, forgiveness is like setting the prisoner free and finding out you were the one held captive. And so they did come to the wedding. There wasn't a fight, which was always a good thing when there's not a fight at a wedding.
Yes.
But
and his mother even attended, and all of his siblings, yeah, and their families. So there was an interesting stake put into the ground,
yeah,
on that day.
Almost like I drew a line in the sand saying, it wasn't so much that I'm honoring my wife over my mom. It was, mom, I'm going to do the right thing. And I know this might be painful for you, but I'm not doing it to hurt you. And I hope that you understand that. And it was years later, as my mom was passing away, I wrote her a tribute. And in one of the lines, I put, you were an imperfect mom that was perfect for me. And after I read her this tribute in front of Michelle and our children and my stepdad, she embraced me and she whispered in my ears, I wish I could have married a man like you. Yeah.
That was a long process.
Yeah.
But that began, that initiative of inviting Jose's father to the wedding and stepping through that huge portal of chaos began the process of building a semi-relationship with your father.
Yeah. Well, it started in 1981. And so for 13 years, I began, you know, we initiated, hey, we're coming to Tampa, I'd love to see you. I'd invite him to all my baseball games, never would come.
We sent him Christmas cards and just, you know, notes from pictures of the children as they grew, different things.
So this was 1994. In January of 94, I went down to Atlanta to speak at actually the same prison my dad was in, the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, with the Chuck Colson Prison Fellowship Group. And while there, I remember walking down the same hall, seeing the same visitation room. And after speaking to a group of men, I do remember telling these guys on my opening lines, hey, man, I was in this prison as a five-year-old boy. And some guy goes, man, you was a bad dude. And I was like, well, I was visiting my dad. I wasn't an inmate. I wasn't a resident. So I walked out, and this was kind of pre-cell phone days, and went over to a payphone, a thing you actually put a quarter in and dialed. And I called my dad from the prison phone and told him that I just spoke in the same prison that he was in. And our relationship had grown quite a bit. It wasn't ideal, but it had grown quite a bit. And told him what I was doing there. And as I ended the conversation, I vividly remember saying, hey, Dad, all that's happened is forgiven by me. And I know God will forgive you too if you ask him. But I want you to also know that I love you. And I just shut up. I didn't say a word. And what he said knocked me to my knees, because it was the first time that I'd ever heard it, when he said, I love you too, son. So that was 94. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years later, at a Promise Keepers in Tampa, Florida, and that's kind of a unique story, which really kind of helps us as men understand why we need other men in our life to help sharpen us. But that's the big one.
Yeah, Jose was in an accountability group with several men at that time, and they knew that his story with his dad, they knew the backstory. And then they also knew that he was going to be traveling into Tampa with a business event that he had going on down there. So he was going to be speaking at a corporate group, and one of his guys said, Jose, here you're going to Tampa. You know, Promise Keepers is there this weekend. And Jose was like, so?
Yeah, he's like, well, your dad lives there. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, invite him. I was like, he's not going to go. And he says, well, he may not go if you invite him, but he definitely won't go if you don't. So you invite him. I said, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to throw myself out there again for one more opportunity to be rejected. I said, listen, we've got things kind of smoothed over, and that's just where it needs to stay. And he said, call him. And he wasn't going to let me get away with it without doing it. So I called my dad, and I said, hey, I'm coming to Tampa. Yeah, what for? Well, I'm speaking at this event. And he says, by the way, there's this thing going on at Tampa Stadium Friday and Saturday. And I was thinking about coming, just wanted to know if I invite you, would you like to go? See, I left myself a little out there, because if he says, no, I wouldn't go. And I was like, well, I'm not inviting you. I just wanted to know if. But he said, yeah, I'd like to go. And I was kind of shocked. I was like, all right, you're invited. So we set up the time to pick him up. And if you've been to a Promise Keepers, you know what it's like. They really present the gospel on Friday night. It's one of the opening things they do. They unapologetically share it's faith alone and Christ alone. You can't add to what Jesus did on the cross. And if you're there and you're trying to get something out of this weekend, it really won't make sense until you put your faith and trust in who Jesus is. Go all in with him. And so he and I were sitting there, and we sang a few songs, and then they share the gospel as clearly presented as you can imagine. The two guys that were speaking there, one was a guy named John Guest and another named Crawford Loritz, and I happened to know both of the men and had called them and told them that I was going to be in Tampa. In fact, the event that I spoke at was a hotel they were staying in. And so I left them a message, and by the time I got to my mom's house that afternoon, they had both called and said, we'll be praying for your dad, and they did. And so when they presented the gospel, it was just as clear. It was that Kairos moment that he was right there to whether or not he was going to trust him. And they had us all stand up, and they said this, some of you guys have brought your son. Now, they had just led us in the prayer, not a magical prayer, but they just led us in the prayer. If you want to trust Christ and acknowledge that he is the Christ, he died on the cross, he was buried and he arose, and faith alone in him will allow you to have your sins forgiven, trusting that he did it all for you. And they invite us to pray that prayer for those that have not. And my dad just stood there with his hands behind his head down, didn't move. And I looked over him a couple times, just wondering, you know, what was going on in his mind. And when they said, some of y'all invited your sons, you need to put your arm around them and look them in the eye and ask them that question. And my dad never budged, never moved. And as I was praying, I began praying harder because I knew what those guys were going to say next. And they did. Some of y'all invited your dad and brought your dad here. You need to do the same thing. You need to look him in the eye and ask him that question. Ask him, did you just make the greatest decision in your life by trusting Jesus? And I wrestled. I wrestled with God in a big way. I was like, I'm not doing it. There's no way that I'm going to put my arm up here for him to throw my arm off. I had imagined all kinds of things that he was going to do. But I just, I don't know how, because he said it. You all need to look at your dad. And I was like, I'm not going to do it, God. I've been rejected enough. But I did. And he looked at me, and he was speechless. He didn't say a word, but I asked that question, Dad, did you just trust Jesus as your Lord and your Savior? Did you just invite him to be the Lord of your life? And with tears in his eyes, he said, I did, son. And I said, okay, wait a minute. Now, are you telling me that you're trusting Christ and Christ alone, that it's not a religion, that you're putting your faith in the finished work of Christ on the cross? Are you telling me that? And he said, I am. And I said, listen, they're inviting us to walk forward as a public declaration of what's taken place in our heart. I said, you don't have to go, but if you want to go, I'll walk with you. And he said, I'd like to do that. So I just grabbed his arm and put my arm up on his shoulder, and he kind of held on to me, and we walked right down the middle of that football field and stood before the platform there, and Crawford was up on the stage, and I saw him, and he pointed to me, and I waved to him, and I said, this is my dad, and he just trusted Christ. And he was like, yes. And I looked at my dad, and I said, Dad, would you like to pray with me? And he said, I'd like that. And we just got down on our hands and knees, and we prayed for the first time, only time we prayed together. He died shortly thereafter, but I circle it all the way back to the question that Michelle asked. Have you forgiven your dad? See, I really didn't understand what forgiveness was. I thought forgiveness was kind of like you pretend something didn't happen or it didn't hurt, or that you can only be forgiven if you have some conditions attached to it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that the freedom and experiencing a forgiven life, and as well as forgiving someone who didn't deserve it, because essentially that's what God did for us. We didn't deserve it.
Right. I think a lot of times we confuse what forgiveness is and what forgiveness isn't. And that's where we want to help you unpack that situation in your life, where you can discern, do I have an unforgiving spirit, or do I need to ask for forgiveness in my life?
Yeah, I remember reading a Sports Illustrated article in 97. It was about Bo Jackson, who I think is one of the greatest athletes of all time, an all-pro in football and an all-star in baseball. And he said he was jealous of his teammates because they never saw his dad. He was jealous of his teammates because their dad would come watch them play and then hang out with the man in the locker room after the game. And Bo says, my chair sat empty because my dad never came to see me play. So that's one thing I got in common with Bo, because my dad never saw me play a major league game, minor league game. And it still wounds. It still hurts. And so forgiveness is not pretending that it didn't happen, but it's allowing me to manage the pain. And it stings sometimes still.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes we have to remember that it's not an automatic cure for the hurt.
No.
That takes time and effort and the rebuilding of trust. And to some degree, that trust was rebuilt with you and your dad. You were able to at least communicate and spend time together. And so that was a beautiful thing. So it's not, and it's not conditional. I think sometimes we want to say, I'll forgive you if you do this and this and this.
Yeah.
You can't put conditions on forgiveness. I mean, God never puts conditions on our forgiveness. All we have to do is ask for it. And so that's where we have to learn the things that forgiveness is and the things that forgiveness isn't.
Yeah, you know, when you and I, sometimes if I break your window at your house, you know, which I did my neighbor's house a lot of times, he'd forgive us, but we would make restitution. You know, we would work in his yard to pay for the window, whatever. God doesn't call us to make restitution with him, but sometimes in our relationship, there's things that I do to build trust back up. Mm-hmm. Just because you forgive me for something, or just because your spouse has forgiven you for something,
or anyone,
you may need to start making those small deposits of trust again, and there may be something you need to do to help show that you truly are allowing the Spirit of God to change your life, so that you don't go down that dark path again, whatever it may be. And I think that with my dad, even though I did not require him to do any of that to be forgiven, it was neat to get that unexpected phone call occasionally towards the end of his life, just to say hi. So yeah, forgiveness is a powerful thing.
Yeah,
I've told that story a lot, but yeah. It still gets us.
I think another thing that people have to remember too about forgiveness is it doesn't mean that things always go back to the way they were before. Sometimes there have to be new boundaries set up. There has to be a new plan, a new way of executing this relationship that may not be as it was before. And that can be painful, but that's also important for people to understand.
Yeah. We also need to understand that, you know, forgiveness is setting something free from an offense. You know, it's like paying them a debt, mortgage. If they tear your mortgage up, they've forgiven you that debt. They're not going to come back 5 years later and try to put those pieces together and say, hey, you need to pay for that debt.
Right.
We have to name what we've done.
Right. And that's exactly what you did when you called your dad that day and you said, Dad, I need to ask you to forgive me. So you named it, and then you owned it. I have sinned by harboring bitterness and anger towards you.
Yeah, and I didn't say, I wouldn't have done it if you wouldn't have done this. I took full ownership of the sin in my life. I had an unforgiving heart. And a lot of times we, because of pride, we want to justify our sin. We want to justify, well, I'm not going to forgive them because they'll never change. Or they've done it again. They've been repeat offenders. So we have to name our sin. We have to own our sin. We have to kind of feel what it's like to be the victim.
Yeah, you have to feel the pain of the other person. And that even though your father wasn't feeling really any pain, I mean, he had kind of just dismissed you for a period of time in your life. But in a personal relationship where we violated one another with a lack of trust or whatever it is, we have to feel what the other person is experiencing when we want them to forgive us. We need to experience their pain.
Yeah, and then when it comes down to the bottom line is, I changed, and it changed me by being unforgiving. So I had to change my behavior towards him. I wouldn't bring up the past.
Right.
If he brought it up, I'd say, Dad, it's forgiven. Mm-hmm. There's no sense in talking about it anymore. It's forgiven. You're forgiven. And a lot of times, particularly when we've really messed up, it's not that we'll ever forget it. We don't want to remember, but we'll never forget it kind of thing. We have to understand that God, when he says he forgives us our sins to be remembered no more, buried in the deepest sea and removed as far as the east is from the west, not the north from the south. I can start going north and eventually I'm coming south, but I can head east and I'll never meet up with west. And so I think that that's where when we make those conscious decisions to forgive, it's like you choose not to remember it against me anymore. God doesn't have spiritual amnesia. He's omniscient. He knows what we've done wrong. He just chooses not to remember it against us anymore. And I wonder how you're doing. I wonder how you're doing with your spouse or a loved one or someone who's hurt you. Are you rehearsing that hurt over and over again? Because if you do, you're not hurting them. You're just hurting yourself.
Yeah. So we want to help you learn to let it go. And we want to free you, as Jose said, that he found out that he was the one that was held captive. It wasn't anyone else. And then you want to free the other person from your from the attitude that you have towards them, that resentment, that anger, that bitterness that you're holding. You want to free them from that and free yourself from it too, because it's so unhealthy and so unhelpful when you hold that bitterness and anger inside. And then you want to free both of you from the past. Trust that you can rebuild this thing together. And like I said, it may need some parameters initially. There may be times where you have to say, we'll start off, you know, with this much interaction, and then we'll expand it as we go. But then you free yourself from doing it by yourself, because ultimately Jose could have never forgiven his dad without the power of the Spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
He never even wanted to ask
no.
for that forgiveness.
Well, I mean, you know, we talk about what would Jesus do and how nice it would be. And I remember, you know, hearing that, would you rather have Jesus with you 24/7 or would you rather be filled with the Spirit? And the right answer is I would rather be filled with the Spirit, because Jesus said it's better for you that I go away, because I'm sending the Spirit. And so that same Spirit is, we have access, and He fills us daily. Not that we get more of God, but He gets every part of our life, and that's what allowed me to do it. Even as a young babe, just beginning this journey of faith, is that I knew the Spirit was the one that was working in that whole process.
Yeah, so we've been married for 42 years. We've unpacked a lot out of our suitcases. It's really surprising, though, that sometimes we'll find something else in there that we yeah. haven't really ever discussed or ever even talked about. So we still keep unpacking our stuff. But that's the beauty of forgiveness and care, that we continue to forgive one another and love one another and work through the difficult issues in our relationships.
Yeah. Something you can practice every day, multiple times. So be a good forgiver. That's what a good marriage is. It's two people that are allowing the Spirit of God to work in their life to become great forgivers and to outserve one another.
The Jesus on Display podcast is produced right here at Fellowship Greenville in Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Follow and share this podcast with anyone who might be interested or curious about our church community or how storytelling unites us and helps us feel more connected. To actively keep up with what's going on at our church, head to our website at fellowshipgreenville.org. Follow us on all social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for tuning in. Grace and peace to you for your week, and we'll see you next time.